everybody, and welcome to the fourth episode of Magic the Prothering.
This is number four because they're all number four.
That's correct. I am one of your hosts of Magic the Amateuring, Megan.
And I'm Maria, and this episode of Magic the Prothering is brought to you by you, as it always is. This is an episode that a series that we make, actually, to thank you for being patrons of the show. So thank you so much, everybody who supports us on patreon.com/mtacast. Your support makes these bonus episodes possible. And of course, cardkingdom.com/mtacast, sponsor of the show. We can't thank them enough for being a great card distributor and just all-around sponsor and supporter of us and other awesome content creators in the community. Get your cards there, cardkingdom.com/mtacast. And Megan,
yes.
Today's Magic the Prothering.
Yes.
Oh boy, do we have a heavy hitter.
Yeah, I'm going to name some things that this person has accomplished.
Okay, go ahead.
5 Pro Tour Top 8s.
That's quite a lot.
So many Grand Prix Top 8s that we cannot say for certain how many.
There's probably a way, but let's just say it's a high number.
It became uncountable at some point.
Agree.
And most recently,
yes.
Winner of the Mox.
Oh,
Maria,
so awesome.
Who is it?
Welcome, everybody, Josh Utter-Layton.
Hey, Josh.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
It's so awesome to have you here with us because you are one of the greats of the game. I think it's just, like, widely acknowledged that that's the case. Does that thought make you feel weird? I don't know. Like, do you ever sit down and realize, I'm one of the greatest players in Magic of all time?
I don't know.
Okay, yeah, I don't.
It's one thing for you to say, like, I acknowledge you as great, but to just claim, like, widely. It's like, well, do you really have the authority to do that?
Yes, we do. So the thing we usually start our show off with is asking people how they got started playing Magic. And you got started back in 1994. Tell us a little bit about how you started playing the game.
I don't remember that long ago.
Me neither, to be fair.
Yeah. I mean, what was happening in 94? Like, probably, you know, R&B.
Well, Pogs had just faded out,
Pogs.
And you know, Magic was the next fad. So
that's very
I had to
true.
Hop on board.
Was it really? Yeah. Did it really feel? I mean, I don't actually know how old you are, so we're probably like the same age. I don't even know, but I was just like not quite old enough to play Magic. Kind of when it was at its first early zenith. Were you part of that first wave? Do you think?
Pretty early on, the Dark had just come out when I started playing, I think. And just kind of like all of my friends played, and it was just a thing that everybody did.
Awesome. And so, like, how did you, like, if you get started, like, right when it comes out and you're playing with friends, at what point did you transition to playing more competitively and sit down and go, like, all right, this is the thing that I'm going to try and be good at?
Yeah. I played on and off all growing up and all through middle school, high school, and then went off to college and had stopped playing for a while before at that point. And then my first summer home from college, I had like a really bad internet connection. At this point, I'm not playing Magic at all. My game of choice is Defense of the Ancients. And I'm like stealing Wi-Fi up in my room from a neighbor. It's like really, really, really sketchy connection. and I can't play Dota on it. So I'm like, all right, well, let's find a game that I can play. And I ended up coming across Magic Online and started that summer and just got like super hooked into it again and just started playing a ton from there. So that was kind of how I started like getting good at the game and transitioning to competitively was picking up Magic Online and learning it through there.
And you know what's funny is your nickname is Raptor, and that comes from Magic Online, right?
Right.
So early on, they, like, assigned you a name.
No, I chose that. It was,
oh, you did?
It was
okay.
Never assigned, yeah.
And still to this day, your early Magic Online name is still kind of what everybody calls you. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And Magic Online's slogan is still a program that you can run on stolen Wi-Fi.
Yep, that is.
Yeah,
that
when
is
you go to download the game, that's what it says.
So, how did you go from playing and getting better at Magic Online to sort of playing more competitively and meeting up with the Team Channel Fireball people?
Continue playing Magic Online throughout college. Didn't really play real life at all at any point there. Graduated from college, moved to the Bay Area, and like right after I moved there was a local Grand Prix. technically Grand Prix San Francisco, located in San Jose. And so like, hey, there's this tournament that I have right here that's going to be a huge deal for, and so I you know, wanted to play in it. And so just ordered a deck online and started playing in GPTs and kind of met people in the community through there. And yeah, eventually made it like a good network of friends and continued to level up playing with them.
How did you qualify for your first Pro Tour, which I believe was Pro Tour Hollywood in 2008?
So after the Grand Prix in San Jose, I obviously kept playing in real life. And so the first PTQ season after that was for Hollywood. It was old extended and counterbalance top was legal. So yeah, I played all of that season, ended up winning the very last PTQ to qualify with my trusty counterbalance deck.
All I can say is I'm really happy there's not a format called old extended anymore. Awkward.
Hey, do you want to go to that old extended tournament this weekend?
Yeah, that sounds great.
It's like modern, but only for old people.
So what is it that kind of drew you into the game? You mentioned playing these other games. Are you just a gamer at heart, or what is it that attracts you to Magic?
Magic has captured me like no game has before it, and a big part of it is just that it's always providing you with new and interesting puzzles that are hard to solve. It's always changing, so it's just always new things to go explore. No matter what your skill level is, Magic can always provide you with a challenge that like meets your skill level. There's always ways to continue improving, and it's just a lot of fun. It's really satisfying just playing the game, and it's a great way to like interact with people and kind of meet on the same page of this like shared love of the game and communicate through that.
So you work in game design, is that right?
That is true.
So what I want to ask is, why do you think Magic is so successful in being what a lot of people, at least in the game community, think is at least one of the greatest games of all time, if not the greatest game?
Yeah, I certainly agree with that sentiment. And it's just a masterpiece in terms of the structure of the game is just so well done. Really good question.
This is a job interview. You're punked.
Yeah.
For me and Megan's new game design company. JK.
Yeah, so a big part of it is the puzzle size. It's really satisfying to have turns that are, you know, I play my second land and I play my two drop and, you know, I did it. I got that turn right. I solved that puzzle. And so having the range from that to the more challenging of like, oh, okay, now I have five different things I can do this turn, which one's gonna be the best, to the, you know, most complicated board states imaginable. It's like, this is beyond me. I can't figure out what to do here. So the range of challenge, being able to meet your skill level, and provide you with, you know, a flow state, at various points in the game, is super valuable.
Every set is a new puzzle too, essentially.
Yeah, definitely. The fact that the game is always changing is a big part of that, so that it never gets stale. Like, there's always something new to explore in terms of deck building and just new things to play with, new toys to play with.
What's your favorite Magic format to play?
So I like new constructed formats the best. So my usual answer to this is block constructed, because that has always been like the one that has been the freshest, where it gets played for like one tournament and then never gets played again, which is exactly what I want to do. I just want every tournament to be a brand new format.
I love that idea, actually.
Yeah. So as far as like actual formats, that's what I want. But really, it's just new constructed format all the time.
If you could make a constructed format, what would you make?
If I can make a constructed format?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Like, I choose the parameters.
Yeah, you get to say, like, which sets or which cards or
even how
are
many
legal.
Of each card.
Yeah. You get to set the parameters for this new constructed format.
This is a job interview.
Yeah. It's going to be 3 copies of a card maximum.
Okay.
4 is too many, makes the decks too consistent. Let's see, what sets do I want? I don't know.
I actually am so intrigued by your first part of your answer, which was
three of a kind.
Let's do like alternating years from like the start of the game. Just like every like 5 years, the block from that period.
Okay, done.
You so like got whatever it. Sets yeah. came out in the year Magic started.
Yeah.
And then every 5 years.
Yeah.
Every 5 years from that, yeah.
I play that.
Amazing. And you could have, then you could do it for all of the intervals. You could do like a format that's like from every 2 years.
Yeah.
And a format that's from every 3 years, 4 years, 5 years.
And see which format is the best and who can break it the fastest. I mean, from the first year, you're going to get some pretty broken cards, so.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true.
Things are going to be pretty crazy.
Speaking of, like, making your own formats and being a game designer and this being a real job interview, tell me a little bit about what it's like to work. You work at Direwolf with a bunch of Magic players. LSV's over there. Patrick Chapin's over there. Patrick Sullivan's over there. Is it really cool to be able to work with these people who are your friends, not only, like, in the Magic community, but you can work on different games with them as well?
Yeah, it's an amazing group of people, and they just have like such a fantastic like intuition for good games and good design, and it's really a great experience working with them.
Go to work every day, make some games. Seems pretty sweet.
Seems pretty all right. Pretty all right. So, like at the most recent. PT, they introduced the new teams and like playing in the team series. How do you feel about playing in the team series? How's that like changed the Pro Tour for you so far and even like the Grand Prix?
I think it is awesome. It just makes it so much more fun playing with a team and like having vested interest in how your friends are doing and having more to play for than just yourself. I think it's really cool. It just makes the whole thing like it adds another level of excitement of there's more than just how you personally do in the tournament.
Did you find that it changed the way that you prepared at all? Or was it like, did you prepare with different people, more people, fewer than to how you had for previous Pro Tours?
No, that was pretty much the same for us. We had basically our same testing team still and just formed it out of people that we wanted to test with for the Pro Tour anyway. I think most of the teams took that approach, which is really cool. Having it be like actual, like, yeah, these are the people that we have been preparing with for tournaments and continue to do so. And we're going to be a team rather than trying to just build the like all superstars team type of thing.
I kind of am sad. You know, now you've got me sad that Block Constructed is gone.
I was sad when they first took it away.
Don't remind me.
It was cool, right? Because
it was super cool.
It was like
cool.
Really weird. And like, what the problem was that it was easily, like, quote unquote, easily solvable and all the decks were the same or whatever.
I thought it was just that, like, it just didn't get the same viewership.
Oh, because it wasn't.
Yeah, it's just that nobody plays it at home.
Yeah. Let's break out those decks and play some Black Constructed.
I still remember, like, there were all
people
these.
People are missing out. They should be doing that.
I agree. Those Sphinx decks. Remember those?
I was thinking of, like, the sweet Constellation decks from the Theros Black Constructed.
Yep.
Like, those were sick, and you didn't get to see them anywhere else.
And it, like, exemplified the theme of the set, you know? Yeah. It was, you know, in Amonkhet, we're going to like, somebody would bring the cat deck, fingers crossed, make a cat, or whatever. And then, yeah.
Well, I think we're all sick of cats by this point already.
So. Yeah, what am I saying? Never mind. Never want to see another cat true. Again. Megan's playing Saheeli Cat this weekend, right?
That's very true. It's very true.
How do you feel about it?
You know, I don't, like, let's pass on okay. top.
So you've played in a lot of super high level events over your long and storied career. So do you have a deck that you feel is your favorite, your pet deck of all time?
So I do. And it is based off of, I don't know if you can see it in the background there.
Yes! That
is a Jeskai Ascendancy. So I built a Jeskai Ascendancy combo deck in Modern for the World Championships. This was when This was when Big Through Time and Treasure Cruise were legal in that short time span.
Was there such a time?
It was a beautiful.
It was glorious. You just got to draw all the cards, and then you know, eventually you played an enchantment and killed your opponent. But mostly, it was about the drawing all these cards, and that was really fun.
Yeah, I still remember watching the first videos of that Modern deck, and I had never even really played Modern, and I was like, I see a reason to play Modern, like, this makes sense. This seems great.
Yeah, it was a really cool and kind of a unique deck, and I remember you being like, I'm playing Jeskai Combo.
I played it in Standard.
Oh, in Standard.
I played the Standard version, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a sweet deck. And what is your other artwork on the wall, by the way? Behind you.
That is a Stoke the Flames.
Oh, cool.
Nice. That's a baller poster painting.
Yeah. Still gets to sit side by side with Ascendancy, even if they are no longer played together.
Alas, friends.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your recent Magic career. You managed to win GP Vancouver, which was awesome, and especially important for you to get back on the Pro Tour. Which was a really, impactful win. And then you went off of that and proceeded to win the Magic Online Championship right after that, which is a hell of a good prize, if I do say so myself. So, like, talk a little bit about how it felt to go from, like, I don't know if I'll, make this next Pro Tour or whatever, to being locked for a while.
Yeah, so my friends decided to put me on the Channel Fireball Fire. There's a lot of fire. I got that. CFB Fire. We're gonna go with that.
Okay, CFB
on
Fire.
The CFB Fire team. Despite me not being qualified for all the PTs, and so if I had missed a PT or two, I would have been okay with that, and it wouldn't have bothered me. But because of the team thing, I had, like, all this pressure placed on me by myself to make sure I qualified and not let my teammates down. I was going to all the GPs until I qualified for the last two Pro Tours. So certainly doing well at Vancouver was, like, a huge weight off of my back. It's like, oh, thank God. I don't have to, like, tell my teams, like, sorry, guys. Not gonna make it to this PT. So that was, like, the biggest part for me. More so than winning was just like, yes, I'm qualified for the PT and don't have to, worry about that happening.
You were also at GP Vancouver. You were playing the Death's Shadow aggro deck that now obviously everyone's like, oh man, this deck is great and fantastic. But at that Grand Prix, like, it had been around at a couple of earlier ones, but that was the one where it really hit its hardest. So how did you feel, like, piloting that deck? Like, when you picked it up, were you like, holy cow, this is incredible? Did it kind of take you by surprise?
It definitely took me by surprise just how good it was. I did not really expect it to be quite so easy, I guess.
That's an interesting use of the word easy. I tried to play that deck in a league, and I was just like,
oh, I don't mean like easy playing it, but like, I could mess up all the time and still just win anyway.
That's awesome. Because, that's a great question, because how do you know when you're on the brink of something big? Did you have a moment that weekend when you're like, wait a second, this deck is just insane.
No, there was no, like, one moment. I think it was mostly just, like, every round checking in with the friends who were playing. It's like, oh, we all won again, and we all won again, and we all won again. And just kind of, like, slowly over time, it's like,
Something's
funny. It's mostly that, and also just coming to the realization, it's like, oh, yeah, just trading one for one a bunch down to both players having nothing, and then me having a one mana 7/7 is, like, really good. That part is easier to tell early on.
So talk a little bit about taking down the Magic Online Championship, which is like a really crazy tournament when you think about it.
It's a long weekend.
A long weekend, tons of Magic, complex games, and you're sitting at a computer the whole time. What?
Yeah, playing online in a high stakes tournament like that is a very different experience. And it's even weirder playing like not at home, because like, you know, then it's just, if it was that, then you're in like a familiar environment and this is like just, I'm just playing Magic online just like normal. But yeah, like sitting in this like Wizards of the Coast office room playing on a computer surrounded by all of the other players, but you're not actually like, you know, seeing them when, or interacting in any way, like when you're playing, it was a very unique experience.
Yeah, and very appropriately, you were playing Magic Online using someone else's Wi-Fi. Using Wizards of the Coast.
Circle.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Right back to my
brought it back. So obviously, like that's a for a lot of reasons, a big win. But like, what did winning the Mox mean for you? Mean for your pro Magic career? Mean for you personally?
I get to play in Worlds again. I get to play in the Mox again. Like those events are just like so special and so awesome to play in. First of all, just like the level of competition is like incredibly high. You're just playing against, you know, the absolute best players in the world every single round. And just the fact that it's, you know, these 16 or 24 player events, that Wizards just like completely pampers the players and just makes they're a huge deal. And just, it's like this weird mix of like this kind of casual environment where it's just like, yeah, we're gonna play some Magic and, you know, hang out with a bunch of friends. And it doesn't feel like there's the pressure like of a big event. And there's not like all these people around, and this just kind of feels way more low key. And yet it's also just like, oh yeah, and we're just playing for way more than normal. And it, like the stakes are just so much higher and the competition is so much harder.
Boom,
so it's
platinum.
Like, yeah. Yeah. It's just such a weird, there's such a weird mix of like the most competitive and most casual tournaments like you can play in. It's just like, it's an incredible experience playing them. I'm super stoked to get to play in Worlds and the Mox again.
Because what some listeners may not know is that at the Mox, you got sweet jackets with your custom jackets with your names on them.
What?
And at World Championships, there was Nutella in the green room.
I mean, I think we can all agree on which of those is better.
Yeah, I did not know about the Nutella. That's news to me.
What? Oh, it was definitely in there.
I would have tried so much harder earlier. Just knew there was Nutella.
Worlds is fine. Wait, there's Nutella.
Oh my god. By the way, Nutella in the green room.
Let me rearrange my priorities.
My new punk band, come see us.
Great, yeah.
Okay, this is my personal favorite question to ask everybody who's on Magic the Pro the Ring, and that is, why are you good at Magic? What do you think specifically in your skill set makes you able to be successful at the game?
Okay, so my strength lies very much not in optimization in terms of like fine-tuning like the perfect list or like fine-tuning like the like completely optimizing like play. I think my strength is very much more just figuring out the best things to be doing at a higher level. So more like identifying the best strategies for a format and. Yeah, I think basically I am strongest at like learning new things quickly and identifying big picture from that rather than like optimizing the finer details over time.
When you say like the best things to be doing in a format, do you mean like overall, like this is a good format to be controlling, this is a good format to be very aggressive, this is a good format to focus on card advantage or things like that? Or
To some extent, yes. It's more like identifying these are the best cards to be playing, these are the best strategies to be playing. And based on that, like, okay, these are the best things, so therefore, you know, control is good because you can line up your answers effectively against this or not. Like oftentimes the answer is just, you know, playing the most efficient proactive cards.
How do you identify what you think will be the best cards in a format?
Part of it is intuition, but a lot of it is just putting them into play and experiencing them and kind of drawing conclusions from that. I think you don't need like a very large sample size of games in order to draw conclusions if you're kind of approaching things with the right mindset and looking to understand why things are happening as opposed to just seeing what happens when you play with cards.
Yeah. Are you hopeful for anything? Have you seen anything in Amonkhet so far that's kind of piqued your fancy?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
yes.
So I think beans, Josh.
Yeah, I think the thing that Standard needed most, as a like way to build different decks than kind of the ones we've been seeing in Standard, is a way to punish Gideon. Gideon is kind of the.
I think we like, all agree that we want to see Gideon.
When opponent plays the Gideon, there's like
thoroughly punished.
There's not a whole lot you can do to not feel like you're losing the game.
Yeah,
If you're not already way ahead, there was no card that you could really play that would, you know, answer the Gideon and put you in it at an advantage from there. And it looks like Amonkhet has that card. So the 5-mana 4/4 flying haste that can exert to also kill a creature, that thing is absurd and is exactly what you want to play when your opponent casts a Gideon the previous turn.
That's a dragon, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about Cast Out this whole time.
or Hazmat.
Yeah. So, okay, that's cool. I didn't even think about it. Just kill him with the dragon.
That big old dragon. It's very true. And I have to say that as a person who has suffered under Gideon's reign, I can't wait to see that sucker fall.
You played, didn't you not play him in your black?
I did play him. I played him one time.
All Gideons. Did you see that tweet? That was one of my favorite tweets the other day. Was somebody did a Captain Crunch cereal bowl. But it was like, oops, all berries. It was oops, all Gideons. With like five Gideons like in five Standard. Gideons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Somebody's going to have to make the all Gideon deck, which is like all the legal Gideons. That just would be so good. And so bad, probably.
Awesome. So you foresee some red to come and punish Gideon in this upcoming Standard format?
Yeah, red was actually the one color that actually could do it pretty effectively with the combo of Chandra and her oath was one of the best answers to Gideon before, and now it has like an even more effective tool. So
sweet,
nice. Absolutely,
that's exciting, especially that it's just one card
and that's a dragon,
and
big old
dragon.
Hasty dragon.
Yeah.
Seems pretty sweet. So do you feel like when you were As you've been playing Magic throughout your career and throughout your lifetime, did you ever have, like, a turning point, like one particular lesson you learned, a match that you played, an event that you went to that helped you, like, level up and realize, like, oh, man, like, this was a big turning point for me?
Yeah, I think when I learned to play Control was that moment, and that... really, though, like, I didn't really know how to play Control until Time Sorrow Block. And then I, you know, picked up the teachings deck and slowly, painfully learned how to play it. And that, like, I learned how to play not just that deck, but, like, I learned Control, like, in general from that. And that kind of opened my eyes to, like, that side of things. suddenly I was drafting Control in Limited. And, it just kind of, like, it was like a puzzle piece falling into place from learning that.
You hear that, Maria?
I do, and I'm sitting here like, when will be my learning to play Control moment? When will that come to me? Because drafting Control, definitely not something that I really do. Like, I mean, I've probably done it, but I don't seek it out.
You don't fondly remember it either at this point.
No,
obviously.
No. I mean, I'm just going to draft some duders and smash, but like, but I should learn because a well-rounded Magic player is a good thing to shoot for, I think.
Talking about Control, do you feel like, because I feel like one of the people's favorite things to say these days is like, Control is dead, it's never coming back. Or, you know, Control is dead and they're not going to let it come back. How do you think Control, like, exists these days? Is it fundamentally different from what it used to be? Is it better? Is it worse? Do you see it coming back?
Control is dead and good riddance. Honestly, the kinds of decks that most people like refer to when they say a Control deck are just not very fun. Like, even somebody who likes playing Control and likes playing like you know, long game decks, like the kind of one for one, answer all of your things, draw cards, and suddenly I have cards and you don't. That's just not very fun games. Like it's not very complicated and it's not very interesting. And it I don't think it's that fun for players. Like obviously the control player likes, like a lot of people enjoy that experience of like being in control of the game and having all of the answers and drawing lots of cards. That is fun. But overall, I think it's much more, the games are a lot better when there's more like back and forth and kind of things are on the board as opposed to, yeah, I just have all of these like removal spells and counter spells in my hand. So as far as like, so when I say control is dead, or when people say that, what they really mean is like this classic control strategy of that kind of thing. And control now is much more, you can still have decks that are looking to go long and have inevitability in matchups. And those are control decks as I would define them, in terms of that's the like the defining factor of a control deck is, do you want to extend the game? Are you looking to win a game on turn 20 or whatever? Do you have inevitability? Those just don't look like they used to. They're just full of creatures. And I think that the game is better for control decks looking like that.
If you could have your druthers, which is a word, what kind of deck are you most happy playing?
Aggro control, absolutely.
What does that mean?
So the most, like, the best recent example is the Jeskai. It had so many different names because nobody could really like say what it was, but it was a Jeskai aggro control deck. It was like a bunch of efficient creatures and burn spells and also dig through times. So I like that style of deck the most because it can play so many different kinds of games. Like some games you are an aggressive creature deck, and some games you're a burn deck trying to squeeze in the last few points, and some games you're an attrition deck and you trade one for one back and forth with your opponent, and then you have a, you know, chain dig through times to come out over the top. So the variety of different games that this kind of deck can play is why I enjoy it so much.
Nice. Druther, North American informal, a person's preference in a matter. I just needed to know exactly what that meant.
What druthers meant?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's always pluralized. It's not like, if you could have your druther.
Druther. Yeah, I guess it's like, if you could have your preferences in a matter.
Yeah.
If you could have your preference.
Druthers.
Druther just sounds like a bad. It sounds like you don't know that brother begins with a B. Oh, this is my druther.
My druther.
Have you met him?
My druthers.
So besides this excellent 5/5 hasty dragon that we've seen in previews so far, is there anything in particular that you're hoping for in Amonkhet?
Like with your druthers?
If you had your druthers.
this is really
honestly, Gideon needs more things to really keep him in check. So I would definitely not mind some more. Obviously, white gets cast out, which is a fantastic card in terms of power level. And that does is a perfectly acceptable answer to Gideon. But yeah, give other colors some love in that department.
Yeah,
one could only hope.
I'm not hoping for that, but
no. Okay.
No.
Some other kind of answer, like exile target Gideon.
Sure, so, I'm in for that.
Speaking of you know, getting Gideon the heck out of here and changing Magic forever, if you could change one thing about the game, what would you change and why?
The game's really good. There's not a whole lot of a change. I think the like low-hanging fruit that I have a problem with is just the discard step. Like, it's the least fun step in Magic, absolutely. Like, you're just sitting there mana screwed, it's like, and now I have to get rid of a card, really? Just, come on.
Oh, I see. I was thinking of, like, when you had drawn a million cards or something like that.
No, then it's the best step ever. Then it's like, yeah, okay. I have to discard.
You know what? Didn't...
someone else has answered this.
Somebody else said that as well. I want to say it was Eric, but I'm not sure.
No, was it? Or was it, like, was it... Jerry, or was it whoever,
it could be
or was
any
it Brad? And Jerry was like, Brad took my answer.
I don't remember.
It's one of those.
Someone will remember.
It's one of those.
Yeah, but no, that's interesting because they're like, they said that there's, you don't have a huge inherent advantage by just having that many, you know, one or two more cards.
And it allows for some broken stuff.
Yeah.
In the discard step.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yep. In terms of like answers that I didn't know that we would hear twice.
I know.
That's
pretty,
that's
that
really
either.
Curious.
Yeah.
So if you were to give players coming up in the game like one tip, your number one piece of advice, what would it be?
For somebody looking to improve, or
yes.
For somebody okay.
For someone looking to
get
suck.
Worse.
Play with somebody better than you. That's just the best way to get better at the game.
Yeah,
and
that
if you don't have any, you know, friends locally or whatever, Magic Online is a great way to do that because you will find players better than you on there.
Awesome.
So tell us if you have, sitting around in your back pocket, one of your favorite Magic stories. This could be something that happened to you at a tournament or event, or somebody else entirely, a game that was particularly cool. Do you have a story of Magic? Regale us, if you would.
Okay, well, I don't know if this is a great story, but my first Pro Tour experience, I didn't really know anybody at the Pro Tour, going to the Pro Tour at this point. But I had made friends with somebody called FF Freak on Magic Online.
Yeah.
He was also not qualified for this Pro Tour, but his brother was.
I see.
So I end up, you know, working with his brother, Corey, for the tournament. And obviously Brad is helping out also. And then go to the Pro Tour, and I'm staying with Brad and Corey, and we have a room together. And it turns out that back in those days, Brad snored very loudly, like very loudly. And I just could not sleep at all. It was bad. So I like try sleeping in the bathtub. Not going to happen. End up having to go out onto the balcony and spend my first Pro Tour sleeping outside.
No way! Oh,
that's amazing.
Yeah. Good thing it was in California.
It was Pro Tour.
Yeah.
What can people find you doing on the weekend? Are you playing a lot of Magic, or
if you weren't playing Magic?
Okay, if you weren't playing.
If it was like if it was like soccer, but instead of not using your hands, you can't play Magic. That analogy works.
I don't know why
you're laughing. That made tons of sense. What would you do?
Well, speaking of soccer, I do play soccer.
Oh, okay. Oh,
there you go.
Oh,
there awesome. You go.
So, this is also a question we ask everybody on the show. What has Magic given you over the years?
So much of my life, like, almost all my closest friends I've met through Magic. Certainly my current career is a result of Magic. And just like my ability to, like, so much of like my thought process has been built from like just being wired playing Magic over all these years. And I think that like just like the like insights it gives, and just the like way to think about problems that Magic has trained me for is just like so beneficial. And it's just like brought me so much fun. Like it's brought a lot of joy to my life.
And a lot of slang, like non-zero. I can say that in real life.
Yeah.
I really feel like I'm drawing dead at my job, you know what I mean?
Too real.
Too real, everyone, too real. All right.
Final question.
Final question.
Potentially the most important.
Yeah.
Of them all.
So, ask it.
We have, you know, we like to think about what type of set would we design were we given the opportunity to design a set. Mine would be breakfast themed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it would have waffles, it would have syrups, you know, classic
breakfast.
Classic breakfast plane.
Yeah.
That this would be happening on. Maria's is Huey Lewis and the News themed.
Yep. So basically bands from the 80s.
Yep.
But centering around Huey Lewis and the News as planeswalkers.
Yeah.
Reed Duke's answer was
King Arthur.
King Arthur set.
King Arthur set. That was great. That was
kind of cool. So yeah. Is there any like dream that you've had for a set that you wish could be realized?
Or a completely ridiculous answer.
Yeah, like ours are definitely serious.
ours are very serious. We've given them tons of thought.
What I would love to see is like a Pokemon themed set.
That'll definitely happen. You know, of our answers being completely and utterly implausible, he managed to one-up us.
Yeah, no, like, good job.
Although, like, Pikachu Planeswalker?
That would be amazing.
I would be so into that. It would be adorable, and it would shock people, bzzzt, you know?
Yeah.
That'd be one of the abilities, plus one, bzzzt, something.
Mostly, it's really amazing to imagine Watsy being like, there you go, guys. All right, did it.
We did it.
We brought them together.
Like, why are we fighting between ourselves when we could just have a monopoly on the world?
Chase versus Pikachu. That's where it's at.
Yep. Oh, my God.
Who would win?
I would buy 1,000 copies of Duel Decks Jace versus Pikachu.
Oh, yeah.
I would walk into every local store in the greater Twin Cities area and just be like, give me all of them.
Yeah.
And like, every copy.
Pokeball is like some kind of exile spell.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yep.
Great idea. Fantastic answer.
Amazing.
Thank you so much for chatting with us on this episode of Magic the Prothering, Josh. It was awesome talking to you and getting to know you better.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This has been fun.